Three, two, one, ghost. Hi, everyone. Welcome to 321 Ghost. I'm your host, the Wicked Witch of the West Coast, Natalie. And with me, as always, is my BFF, who I don't always agree with, but love anyway, Kyle.
Hey,
How's it going,
Natalie.
Kyle?
Oh my gosh, it's going good. I'm prepared. I'm a little scared.
Prepared to fight?
Yeah, gosh, a little bit. We'll see. I don't think so. I think we're going to come to some good agreements here, but I think this will be a good showcase for the essence of like where we align and where we don't.
I agree. So it's been a while since we've done a bonus episode, and typically we have some structure to these. This particular episode, I think, is a good check-in for maybe anyone who's recently started listening to the podcast or has been like going back and listening to older episodes and maybe needs to get a good feel of our personalities and our overall feelings on horror. So we're doing something a little different here. We're talking about our horror hot takes. And when I say that, it's very vague. So it can be anything from your thoughts on a particular movie, maybe a genre trope of movies, a category of horror, any which way. But we're going to try to keep it not too negative. There might be some arguing, hopefully more arguing between the two of us than with our audience. We'll see. But I think it's going to be good.
I mean, we'll see. I've seen some of the stuff in our comments, and there are some opinions that are just flat out bonkers. I love it. I'm here for it. But and admittedly, when we came up with doing this for a bonus episode, yeah, is a little clickbaity, sure. But
Yeah.
are we necessarily we're not quite at the part where we're doing like just straight ranking episodes yet. I feel like that's a really popular thing that also has some hot take overlap with it, but I
Yeah.
think it'll be a fun conversation, and I'm really excited to hear the people that listen to this, how they react to what we've got. 'Cause I honestly, this I think was a tougher one to come up with examples for
Yeah.
than I thought it was going to be originally. How about you?
Yeah, it was for me too, especially considering I think through our track record, I tend to fight against anything that I think is like the norm of the opinion. I don't mean to, but it tends to happen. But what I think is important to point out is even if you don't agree with something that we're saying, we respect everyone's opinions. Like, you're going to love what you're going to love. You're going to hate what you're going to hate, and that's fine. I think the horror community can be a very fun place in that we all have different opinions. We all love different franchises and all of that. But if we say something that goes against something that you love, or if we love something that you hate, be respectful. Respect others always. But if we don't agree with your opinion, you're probably fucking wrong.
Yeah.
That's that. So, Kyle, my optimistic friend, I'm gonna let you start. What's your first horror hot take?
I'm going to start with something soft because I don't know if this is necessarily a hot take, but it is absolutely a trope that I cannot fucking handle. I'm not going to be super optimistic just yet.
Okay.
It's fucking prequels, Natalie. These it's anything that I see that has a subtitle of the beginning or origins. There's no fucking word I hate more than anything in pop culture than origins as a subtitle.
I can't believe you used that as an example because one of our favorite prequels has the word origin in it.
Leprechaun.
No. That those Ouija movies,
See,
is it called it's called
Origin
Origin
of
of
Evil.
Evil.
And I was even thinking about that, like, okay, are we going to have maybe some exceptions?
Of course.
Sure. I think that is the only one that I would maybe even say, okay, is an exception. I still am not going to say it's a great movie by any means, but
No, it's fun and it's better than the original or the first.
and also one thing that could potentially be seen as an exception, I'm not counting, one of which being Saw X, because yes, does it jump backwards in the timeline? Yes, but it's wedged in between Saw, what, Saw 2 and 3, or Saw 1 and 2?
No, between one and two. I would not consider that a prequel either, especially because it doesn't have that subtitle of the beginning or origins or anything like that. Like they're counting it as the 10th movie.
And like a movie like Orphan First Kill, which we love very, very
That's my
much.
favorite prequel.
But I'm going to say, yes, it's a narrative prequel in the sense that she killed everybody at the end of the first movie, and we're just going to see what happened before that happened. You're not getting like the genesis of, why Esther is evil.
Yes.
You're just like, oh, fuck, I guess she was still that way. However many years prior.
Is how she started, and this is how she's gonna be.
Yeah. So I'm not getting like, it's not even like a prequel movie. That's more of a remake, but like the Rob Zombie's Halloween. Like, I don't fucking need all of this Michael Myers. Like the whole idea, and maybe this is kind of my thesis behind some of this, is knowing more is the antithesis of horror or finding things scary. Like, I don't want to know how fucking Leatherface becomes Leatherface. I don't fucking care how, I don't know, the first omen or the first purge. It's, I don't care. I think it's
The
unnecessary.
part of fear, a big part of fear, is the unknown and what you can't see. And I think one of the interesting things about a villain or them being evil is not always knowing their motive or their backstory. Like sometimes things are just scary. And when you really think about it, like all the people that get killed in these movies by these villains, they get like less than 2 seconds to even comprehend what's happening. Like you think about Michael Myers, like before his knife is just like jabbed into the wall with you. I don't need to know his story. He's just some motherfucker that stabbed me. I think one of the things, like Michael Myers is a great example in the Rob Zombie movie. It's like, why do we want to sympathize with this character? Like, and
Yeah.
that movie, like spoilers for Rob Zombie's Halloween, if you haven't seen it yet, that's your own fault. Like, I don't need to know that he had like a rough childhood. He's scarier if he didn't have a rough childhood and he's just evil.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I agree. A prequel is not a necessary part of a franchise.
I think another example is the Paranormal Activity movies. I think that the first one is scary when you just, I don't know, man. It's just some fucking demon. Who knows why they're targeting them in this, high middle class suburban San Diego County home. I don't know. But then when you watch these movies that don't immediately present themselves as prequels, just because they're numbered sequels, but like, I don't want to hear more about like, oh, well, no, the history of, the coven of witches and why this demon specifically tied to Katie. It just becomes so convenient. And it reminds me, I bring up Star Wars quite a bit here,
You really
like
do.
that it's, at least for me, and I will argue, maybe this is hot take, I think other reasonable thinking Star Wars fans would agree, like it's so convenient when you jump backwards and you're like, it's, oh, it's so rooted. It's always about the fucking Skywalkers. It's always about, just this convenient fucking plot of why, well, I don't even know if I can explain this well, but I think people get the gist of what I'm saying. I don't, it just really takes, I don't know, there's some great things about horror movies in particular, where the mystery is, I think, where the unease comes from. And the more you keep shining a light on that, the less effective it is. Not even the less necessarily less scary, but I just not effective. And I don't think it's a, I, and I don't think this is necessarily like a super hot take. It's just, why do we keep seeing these movies over and over and over? It's fucking awful.
It's not okay. It's not that hot of a take, but I am going to push back on you a little bit. I'm glad that you brought up Paranormal Activity because I remember when I had watched the second Paranormal Activity movie, I didn't realize because of the time in between watching the first and the second one, I didn't realize that it was taking place before the, like, I think it's before and after the first film. Like, it ties the time together. I kind of like when it's secretly a prequel, like when it like throws me off. Sometimes that can be fun.
Spoiler alert, like Final Destination 5.
Yeah, like things like that. I like a secret prequel. Like that's a perfect example. That's actually one of my favorite secret prequels. So I like being like thrown off guard because I think for that Paranormal Activity movie, you don't learn too much more in the second one. And the same way with like Final Destination 5, like you're not really unraveling a lot of new information. It's just taking place in a time that you didn't realize. So, prequels are they're complicated, mainly unnecessary. I would argue that prequels are more unnecessary than remakes. Is that a hot take?
I don't think, no, not necessarily.
Okay.
I was gonna say Insidious 3. That's another
That's not
example.
great.
I just don't, yeah, I don't care about anyone's origins. I don't care about, I don't know, why someone's fucking the way they are. I don't care. But I don't know.
Are you gonna share your more relevant example of why this prequel topic got you fired up?
Not, I don't know if it necessarily got me fired up, but spoiler alert for our end of the year, and again, maybe also not a hot take, I loved Weapons. One of my, if not probably
That's
my
not a hot
favorite
take.
this year. And then yeah, you hear that like they're making like an Aunt Gladys movie, and you're just like, why? You just like, especially because again, the movie was so effective that, or in the sense that
The
you watch
mystery.
the mystery of it. I was talking with somebody who hadn't seen the movie yesterday, who hadn't seen the movie yet, and he was saying like, "Yeah, I'm interested in that movie, you know, because I like, you know, aliens and ghosts kind of thing, you know." And I'm like, "Oh boy, you're in for something you're gonna
Oh,
love, or something that's gonna bring you a lot of
good.
disappointment."
Hopefully you said definitely watch this.
Yeah.
If you think it's aliens and ghosts.
So. And then again, oh man, that guy could just be making, and who knows? Don't get me wrong, I'm probably gonna fucking see the fucking movie.
Of
Just
course.
because I really like his last two movies, but you could just be doing something else original. Like, why do we gotta go to this well just because
Exactly.
the shit made money? Like, and so like really, prequels are, it's just when you're just narratively just bereft of ideas and capitalism is your fucking driving force. There's
Oh,
no other
yeah.
fucking reason for it.
Okay, then let me further push this into hot take territory. Do we feel like prequels are more aimed at your like general audience horror fans?
I can't see why they would be.
Well, because what I'm thinking is like if you're like Weapons is a great example because it did great at the box office. It got great like critical review and like audience response. So people outside of, being huge fans of the horror genre probably went to go see Weapons and also probably thought it was more of a thriller. Like I thought it was going to be a thriller more so from the trailer. So I think that it attracted a general audience with that box office, like it had to have. So then when you have a character like Aunt Gladys, why not make a movie about her? Because now you have to go and write a script about a character that you didn't really need to know that much about and really dig into a story and force a story, because how long is it going to be relevant? Like, we're going to probably get this prequel, what, within a year, I would guess.
I mean, he's got Resident Evil he's doing next, so it's going to be a few years.
Okay, true. So, but I don't know. I feel like, something like Insidious is a good example. Like that was definitely like a bigger horror release. Conjuring movies going like back in time and forward in time, and their timelines all fucked up. When you have to like watch a video that says like here's the timeline of like these movies if you put them all in order, like that's too convoluted. I don't need all that.
Yeah.
So, I agree with you on the prequels. That was an easy one, a little
Yeah.
softball.
Put it wrap it up, submit it, there you go. We're in. How
There you
about
go.
you?
That was easy. Okay. We've talked about this before, and I think this is a complicated and complex topic, and there's a lot of history to it. So you could be talking about movies of the past, movies of the present, and movies of the
The
future.
future. Oh,
The
wow.
future. A reason why I say this is because depending on the decade, this topic I have different opinions on. But generally, I think this is a hot take in 2025, but probably more so a hot take for someone who identifies as female. We'll say that because most women that I talk to either don't agree with me or don't understand my passion for this topic. And it's gratuitous nudity in
I was
horror
wondering
movies
where that was my
specifically.
passion for. I was
My
wondering where that
passion for gratuitous nudity. Now, when I talk about nudity, I'm not talking about sexual violence in movies. That's not what I'm talking about. I don't think anyone really wants to see that. And usually, when it's in movies, it's meant to push limits, make people uncomfortable, and usually done in a not very
artistic
It's not a
or
favorable,
even
it, yeah,
mature
it's not a
way. Yeah.
favorable thing overall. I'm talking about a lot of 80s horror, lacks substance and adds nudity to the mix. We'll say that.
Speaking of substance, I watched that again last night, and that does have a lot of
Oh,
nudity in it.
it does. Yeah. But that's a really good example. We'll go back to the substance. And I don't think that nudity is needed, but I do think that it enhances. And my argument of as to why. Now, let's not get things twisted. I do just want to see naked people, not just women. We've talked about this. We need more dicks. We need more equal opportunity nudity, right?
Absolutely.
We agree on that. Yes, we agree on that. But this topic is sensitive because in the past there's been, actresses that have been told, like, well, you're not going to get this part unless you show your tits, or have been made uncomfortable, or whatever the case may be. But there's also instances in where people are comfortable showing themselves naked. I love a good sex scene. I love a good stabbing in the middle of a sex scene. I understand that violence towards women in horror is a theme while they're naked, while they're in bras, while they're in underwear, all the things.
Overwhelmingly so.
Overwhelmingly so. But
But you want to see more butts?
yeah, I want to see more butts. No, I don't think that it's needed. I think it enhances, though. There's something about seeing something that is sexy, naked bodies, beautiful. Maybe a scene even turns you on, but then you're going into something that's gross and upsetting. It feels very visceral. So I like that feeling and reaction that I get out of a horror movie with nudity in it. But again, it's also just being a perv too. So that's my hot take. I think we need to bring nudity back.
I am not going to disagree with that. And I think that I appreciate that you mentioned, we want some equal opportunity. Because that's the thing, right? It's because, it's unfortunately, it was just a while. You just like, oh, You talk to a certain type of just male horror fan, and when they say like, "Oh yeah, we love the gratuitous nudity," it's like always like, "No, you just like all this like violence against women," and because the nudity was always part of that, and of course in these movies, right, it's like always, the dude walking off in a towel or gets in a robe, and he either gets killed off screen or is dressed, and then she not only has to, be naked, but then like die and kind of like, a more, I get where it's like it's portrayed in a more like humiliating fashion, and that's not sexy. Like that's not the sexiness for me. But I, but, but
Stupid.
I, every time I'm gonna do it now. However, I hear you. I think that, hey, we've grown as an audience. I think that the audience for horror is more diverse than it ever has been before, and I think that I hope that turns into more diverse filmmakers, and let's bring a diverse array of nudity that's fun. And like, I'm not saying like, don't kill people when they're naked, you know what I mean? However, because I get the vulnerability of it, I think too. But yeah, like I don't disagree with that necessarily.
And I think that it's important to, to understand that every person and, actor, actress, whoever, they get to decide what they want to do. They absolutely do. Now, I'm not talking about the past. I'm talking about, I have a really specific example that I thought was hilarious. So, okay, the remake of My Bloody Valentine. I don't know when the last time you've watched this movie is. I completely forgot there is a whole scene
Whole ass scene.
where
Ass.
there's, yes, a whole ass scene where there's a sex scene that leads into the miner, not like a miner, like the coal miner, the murderer, attacks a woman right after she's had sex. So she is fully, like fully naked on screen, not just for a moment, for
Chased
a
through.
full chase scene. This woman is naked. Now, I was watching a behind the scenes of this movie because I had forgotten that that was even in it. And this actress was supposed to only be shown naked, like for a short amount of time, like just like during the sex scene right after. Maybe she throws on like a bra and underwear or something. She actually said, "You know what would be really fun? If I did this whole entire scene completely naked." It was her idea. So she decided she wanted to be completely naked. And I was like, when I first watched it before I had known that, I was like, this is too much. Like, did she really need to be like fully naked this whole time? But then once I found out that it was her idea and she thought it was funny and it made the character seem more badass, I was like, oh, now I kind of like this. Which I thought was interesting and funny in its own way, because knowing the actress's mindset made me enjoy it more than not knowing if she like was forced to do that, if she was convinced to do it, if she took like it was the only role she could get and she was like, oh, I have to be fully nude. So just I wanted to point that out because you watch a lot of interviews where like of something, a movie that you like, and maybe there's a nude scene that you do like, and then the actress comes out and says like, oh, actually, I didn't want to do that. Like the director like pressured me into it. And then every time you watch it, you're like, ugh, like that fucking sucks because it's a big part of being a woman in show business and all of that. So I wanted to share that story because I think there can be a reverse to it. And it's just interesting the way that it like changes your perspective of a scene or how it makes you feel when you're watching something. Does that make sense?
And I guess you just think we would kind of be able to like evolve a little past that in terms of like, the objectification of like just women. Like I'm heterosexual. However, let's get some dicks in this movie. Let's
Yeah.
get all the different genitalia. I was like half thinking in my head. I was like, how funny it'd be to just watch Scream, but Ghostface only wears the mask,
Oh my
only
God.
just running
It'd be
around
so
the
much
house.
scarier for the victims.
Wouldn't it? But then I was like, but you it gives away some of the mystery of who the killer is. You know? So
Like, okay, we can narrow it down to just men or just women.
just people with dicks or people with vaginas. We can sort this out. Now I forgot what my thing was gonna
You
be.
forgot what your
But
point
yeah,
was.
I guess you would hope, and like, you know, and this is why I get disappointed sometimes with movies like Terrifier, you know, that like really claim to be like, oh no, we're, you know, this is shocking and pushing limits, and you're just like, no, dude, you're cutting into women's genitals and shit, and you're just kind of like, okay,
They
I'm
cut
not.
into some dicks too later on.
Think of the third one, finally,
No,
maybe.
in the second one.
Yeah. So
And that's the thing too. Dick violence is fun. It's usually pretty funny.
dick violence is generally, well, that's the thing, is because I think also, and you can extrapolate this, I suppose, to just dicks in movies in general, is that dicks are always played for laughs, whereas like you never see like a full dick in a sex scene, really, unless it's like a like an X-rated movie or something. But your run-of-the-mill like stuff you would see in a multiplex, like the female nudity is kind of played for both, whereas like dudes, it's like only played for laughs. You know what I mean? Most of the time. So, but that's
There
why.
is
But the, I agree with you though. I do. I just I think
I
there's a
think it
right way
can
to do it.
be there's a right way to do it, and I think there's also I think that it can still be less serious when it needs to be. And it's hard when you have men writing and directing like most of these movies because they don't always understand from a female perspective what works and what doesn't. And that's what's going to bring me back to the substance. So if you haven't seen the substance, this won't spoil much for you. I won't give any like serious spoilers, but definitely watch it. It's an excellent movie. One of the complaints about The Substance was that the runtime was very long and that they spent too much time on shots like of the hot bodies working out and the close-ups on the thighs and the breasts and the ass and all of that. And when I watched it, it was very clear to me why that was happening. Like, probably not till halfway through the movie did it really click for me. But that movie is sexy in those moments. Like, what is her name? Margaret Qualley?
Yeah, daughter of Andy McDowell.
Yes. She looks absolutely stunning. Demi Moore looks absolutely stunning. Like, these are beautiful women. Like they're gorgeous and they're doing these like these close-ups of her, in this tight little outfit because you're seeing everything in the right place. Everything as it should be, so to speak, as all these like the TV producers are explaining. And you're seeing it and it's gorgeous to watch. And then you see the complete polar opposite of how mutation and things out of place can be so off-putting. So it's this difference between something that's like naked, beautiful, and raw to something that is misplaced and just very like viscerally gross, like the movie can be. But they're using sexuality and nudity in a very intentional way. And that, I think, makes that movie very special and like gives you a real like physical reaction like in the way that you feel when you're watching it like visually it's very very off-putting. So that I think is a good example of how you can use the power of sexuality, especially like with women, and kind of turn it on its head, if that
I'll
makes
sh
sense.
it does. And I'll share someone else's hot take in regard to the substance. I was like watching something just popped up on my Instagram reels where it was John Carpenter talking about like movies he doesn't like. And he quipped, not very cleverly, that the substance had no substance, to which
Ew,
I'm
John
like, ugh,
Carpenter, get out of here.
what a gross old man take. Get the fuck out of here, dude. I industry legend. However, industry legends
He
don't can have bad
he's got an
takes.
ego.
Yeah.
Probably well earned, but
Yeah, I mean, to an extent.
yeah. And also, when you have a woman writing and directing a film that is a horror film and a female story, the use of nudity, even like Demi Moore, like looking at herself naked in the mirror, like that scene particularly is not meant to be sexy. It's meant to show her like really dissecting everything about her body and feeling shame in it and feeling, upset about aging and all of the things, which is even funnier because, the general public was, talking about her and, any plastic surgery that she's had and all of these things and judging her body. And I'm like, you're all proving the point here.
Right.
But, she was willing to show herself naked, which was, but bearing her soul and like part of that character. So I think that's also a good example of like Demi Moore really put herself out there and trusted this director, another woman, to write this story in a way that would do justice for women that are in that industry in a and also in a fun way. Like the movie is fun as well. But I think that is a really good example of a good use of nudity, but also like I do want to see people getting fucked and stabbed. Like I really do. So there's that. That's my nudity hot take.
Hell yeah. Speaking of John Carpenter and Halloween and the franchise in general, I've got a hot take. You want to hear it?
I would love to.
So, Natalie, there are movies that we've covered that we've given high boo scores to that have very low, say, Rotten Tomato scores, or
It's only if just a few.
yeah, just a few, you know. Now there is one movie that I feel got really universally panned that I love, and
Okay.
I think I may have defended at some point, I forget what episodes that came up, but I want to talk about Halloween Ends, which is the third movie of the David Gordon Green trilogy that started, what, in 2018. Now, here's my hot take. Is that not only is that movie great, not good, it's great,
Okay.
but it is, one, the best Halloween sequel compared to any of the others. And I could make a defense that you could get rid of every single Halloween sequel except for Halloween Ends. I just go from the original Halloween right up until Halloween Ends, and that would be such a perfect narrative, such a perfect yin and yang than what David Gordon Green was doing with the 2018 Halloween and Halloween Kills. Seems like a lot of people don't like Halloween Kills, but
It was kind of fun watching Michael Myers kill a bunch of people for like 15 minutes.
yeah. My problem with Halloween Kills is just like, I think this, Natalie, we're in, I don't know, just like a country that's like post Uvalde and post Sandy Hook and post like just awful, awful things. I guess I just don't buy the idea of this town being so traumatized by some random dude killing a couple babysitters 40 years ago.
Or like you'd be ready with some sort of like reinforcements if you live in Haddonfield.
Yeah, like
Like
I just,
everybody is heavily armed, you know?
yeah. And so, and maybe, yeah, I don't know, the whole trauma of it all, maybe we'll get to that later, but I liked the 2018 one. It was fine, but I just don't know if I don't know. I sure, yeah, it's just different interpretations of like what a traumatic event can do to somebody, however many years later. I don't, and maybe this is again just a personal taste of mine, but I don't really like Laurie Strode being this like hardcore, like living in this fucking, you know, what's the word? Why is it escaping me right now? But
Like
this
a
like
bunker.
heavily just like, yeah, just fucking armed
Yeah.
bunker and
I
destroying all of
agree.
her relationships and all of this. Like, I mean, that's.
Over one night. Like, I get it's your trauma, girl. You're gonna handle it how you're gonna handle it. But Halloween H2O feels a lot more believable for a future Laurie Strode, I think.
Well, it's why I kind of liked in Scream 6 when Jenna T Ortega was like, why am I going to let 3 days affect the rest of my fucking life like this? You know, I kind of sided with her a little bit on that one. Now, don't get me wrong, go to a therapist at least, but I think with Halloween Ends, you have a Lori that is very. Now you'd have to kind of figure out a way to write around like why like Judy Greer and Toby Huss are dead. So she's like with her like granddaughter, but I really feel like you could just she's just living with her granddaughter is just living with her. Like, you know, you could just write away a lot of that. And going straight from the first Halloween to the story with Corey Cunningham, who everyone just loves to fucking hate, I think that dude is a did a phenomenal job playing that
He's a great
character,
actor.
playing that kind of cute and meek, but like you could see the like the deadness in his eyes, you know, you could see the danger in a guy like that. And that opening was the best opening since the first one.
It's really fun.
Oh yeah, you'll love good child death, right?
Yeah.
And yeah, you could just say, yeah, like, I mean, what, the end of the first Halloween, he's gone. And then in Halloween Ends, he's living in the sewers. I don't need him just being in some other fucking facility and podcasters and a doctor breaking him out and all of that shit. It's all of that seemed pretty unnecessary. What I do like, though, about the David Gordon Green movies is he does retain like the kind of offbeat, weird characters that I kind of liked in the Rob Zombie movies. Spoiler alert, I fucking hate the Rob Zombie Halloweens, but it seems like it's a hot take depending who you talk to.
There's people who have a pretty strong passion for them, but I have issues aside with them, like their own issues, but continue.
Thank you. I didn't mean to come off like that. It just, I don't know. I think it, like that alone can show that, yeah, okay, evil can come from anywhere. I think you can still even just remove the idea from Halloween Ends. Like nothing in Halloween Ends is dependent on Michael Myers being Laurie Strode's brother too. I think, you know, like I was saying earlier, like the more you like learn about somebody, no one, you don't need it. Like I think, you know, John Carpenter, like I said, has some bad takes, but I think his good take, even though like he helped write Halloween 2, was that making them brother and sister, like again, it's just like Star Wars, just too fucking convenient. Like, oh, she just happened to be just the orphan baby that just happens to live like 2 doors down from the fucking house. Like, it's so convoluted, and I don't know. This movie had such a great vibe. I think it has the some of the best kills of any of the Halloween movies. I'm thinking of just the DJ man just getting his
I
fucking head
know,
smashed
I
in and the
know.
tongue and jaw hanging out. I love just the quirky characters. I like that the bullies were all like band nerds
Oh my God, that was so weird. Okay, let
with
me.
weird haircuts,
May
but
I?
I will say, it's just in my ending thing, is that that movie deserves way more credit than it gets. And not only is it a great movie, it's the best of the David Gordon Green movies, and it's the best Halloween sequel. And you could just get rid of all the other ones and just like a watch from the first one to this one, I think would be that what a killer double feature. No pun intended.
Okay. I'm going to say I agree with you on quite a few things here, but obviously you know I'm going to disagree with you on a couple of other things. Now, I want to preface by saying I don't want to get too deep into the franchise of Halloween. Admittedly, it's not one of my favorites, and it's no shade against Michael Myers. I love Halloween as a standalone film. I even do enjoy Halloween 2 as well. I think it has some fun kills and some good scares. But as a franchise, because we fucked with the timeline so many times, and there's remakes, and Jamie Lee Curtis, love her, but like she's Laurie Strode in several of these different timelines and has a different future from this one specific night, I find myself revisiting this franchise the least out of like the heavy hitting horror franchises. I can honestly say I do not remember at all Halloween 4, 5, is there 6?
Yeah.
Like, I have not revisited those movies in so long because I really don't care. I do like Season of the Witch,
Shout out Season of the Witch.
which is gonna link to where I agree with you. I do think that John Carpenter had it right. And that this Halloween movie series should have been an anthology. I think Michael Myers was good where he was in that first film. I think Halloween Season of the Witch would have done better. Like now people look back on it and there's nostalgia and they recognize it as a good movie because they're able to remove it. But then when it came out and Michael Myers was not in it, everyone was like, what the fuck are we watching? I think Halloween Ends would have been placed well in this franchise as an anthology series. And then you get like a little, where the fuck has Michael Myers been this whole time? And then here he is, right? But I don't remember if we watched the first two of this trilogy together, but I do know that we watched Halloween Ends together, right? So we watched it on a movie night. And what gets me about this movie, and I'm going to contradict myself here because it had a Season of the Witch effect. If this movie was not part of this trilogy and was its own separate thing, I actually agree with you. I do think it's a good movie. And I think the story of Corey Cunningham is really fun. And I like the idea of that same type of evil that you found in Michael Myers, you could find in someone else. And also, yeah, like shout out to the actor. I forget his name that plays Corey. He does have really dead eyes. And he's in Silent Night, Deadly Night, which I want to see. I think that'll
Nice.
be fun. But my gripe with this movie, I do think it's a good movie. I've only seen it once, for the record. It's been a long time.
I've seen it like four times now.
That's insane. I'm
Five, maybe.
going to have to rewatch it so I can see if I still feel this way now with some time and distance between. But the fact that it was part of that trilogy, which is undeniable, brought it down for me because it was a terrible end for that story.
Disagree. Hard disagree.
We
But
could
go
not
for it.
disagree. This is where we really disagree on this. I don't think it was a good ending for that trilogy. If it was removed, I probably would like it better. But it also, like, tonally was such an odd film. I remember throughout the movie feeling like I was watching three different movies in one. It does have really good music. I remember the score is really fun. So I'll give it that. But you also have your character of Allison, who completely changes from where she was. You've got Lori, who completely changes from where she was. So, like you said, if you separate it, you get strength in those things.
If you delete Halloween and Halloween
Yes.
Kills. Yeah.
But we can't delete it. They exist.
In my
And
brain, I
as
can delete them.
you have that right, and I applaud you. But for me, I do not agree. I would not delete all of the sequels. I would keep, honestly, I would keep Halloween 2. I'm going to separate Season of the Witch because it's its own story. I would keep Halloween 2 and I would keep Halloween H2O. I liked Halloween 2018. I did not like Halloween Kills. But I still just have very mixed feelings on this movie. I'll give it a rewatch just for you.
Thank you.
And I think this is a hot take because I think so many people felt the same way I did, where they were like, what the fuck am I watching? This is supposed to be resolved for this. Okay, one other thing about this movie that I didn't like was we went from like the most powerful version of Michael Myers that we'd ever seen in Halloween Kills to this weak, elderly, living in a cave Michael Myers. And that felt really weird too. Like the stark difference between your character of Michael Myers from the second film to the third film.
Further
So
justifying my point.
no, I agree that that's what you want. And that the movie, I think, is a better movie without those first two films. But I can't get past the feeling that I was so thrown off when we watched that movie. I was like, what the fuck is happening? Why are we watching them on his motorcycle to this cool music so much? Like, it was a lot for me. But Kyle will die on this hill, y'all. He will die on it. So I'll rewatch Halloween Ends, and see how I feel about it. But yeah, it's a tough one. And the band Bullies,
So funny.
these are like kids that are in a marching band.
And all their deaths are fun too.
Their deaths are fun. There are fun deaths. And yeah, the DJ. All the yeah, it has fun kills. So, but yeah, and also everyone, this bonus episode was Kyle's idea, and I'm pretty sure it was because he had to tell the world that Halloween Ends is a good movie and it should be the only sequel
I just
to
don't
the
know if we were
Halloween
if
movie.
I just know if we're ever gonna get to it.
I know it would take a long time because there's a lot of Halloween movies.
Especially it's just hard doing like a franchise series on that, just because like you said, the timeline just changes so much, it gets so convoluted. But
You'd almost have to do it in chunks.
yeah. But yeah, the great movie, great sequel. I think I don't know, maybe we'll see in the years as they go. I don't know if just saying that the movie's great is a hot take, but I do think that it's the best sequel. And narratively, without too much stretching, you could just go from the first one to the last one and just get rid of the rest of it.
I think that's your really hot take is deleting the rest of those. 'Cause I know that there are a lot of people that really love the Halloween franchise. And while I can't relate to all of you, I respect it. I think Michael Myers is scarier in the first film above all the others, but yeah,
And I
deleting
think
the whole franchise is wild.
at the end too, because I haven't just like, oh my gosh, it's like he only sees Lori for like 10 minutes at like the very end. And I'm like, yeah, if you deleted all the other ones, he doesn't give a fuck about Lori. Like not he's she just happens to be in his way and just where he's good, what he's doing, Again, if you just get rid of the whole the brother and sister bullshit of it all. I don't know. But yeah, I don't know. That's my hot take. I think it's a positive hot take still, because I'm saying something nice about this movie that a lot of people don't like. But that'll be my piece. Back to you.
No, I think it's a positive hot take to take a movie that got a lot of heat and not a lot of love and say that you like truly love it.
It's like how the second best slasher of the 90s is Urban Legend. Is that a hot take?
Yeah, I would need to think about that one. I have loved Urban Legend more over the years, for sure. Yeah.
Tell me, in a I love I Know What You Did Last Summer. I love, love, love. I still know what you did last summer. Urban Legend is still just, oh my
It's more
God, so much fun.
fun.
It's so much fun. And you just
Yeah.
a performance like that from Rebecca Gayhart,
That's what I was gonna
it's.
say. It's her, man. Like if anyone else played that character, I don't know if it would have hit as hard.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, we love her. Okay. This hot take for me maybe is not such a hot take, but I have two that kind of fit together. So I'm gonna start with elevated horror. I know y'all are probably sick of hearing
Like
me.
that movie Devil.
Why would you bring that movie up?
It's elevator horror. It's in an
Oh
elevator.
my God, I can't stand you.
Thank you.
Is that what you were looking up?
No.
Okay, I was like, were you looking up the name of that movie? I don't hate that movie. Is that a hot take?
I don't know. I've never seen it.
It's kind of fun. I would soft recommend that movie. Maybe that's a hot take, but that's going to be, I soft recommend it if anyone has time to watch it. Okay. Elevated horror. Now, this is a hot topic for me. We've brought it up a couple times because we've covered a couple of movies that kind of coined the term elevated horror. I personally find this term extremely offensive. You could put all the nudity you want in a movie and I won't be offended, but I'm going to tell you right now, if you call something elevated, that is so insulting to other movies of this genre. What I mean by that is there are movies that I love that I know not everybody loves, and that's fine. There are classic movies that I think, like Halloween, or let's say The Exorcist. Would you consider those to be elevated horror, or did they not get released in the time frame that we've created this terminology? So what exactly, I'm curious, Kyle, what makes a movie elevated horror to you, and how do you feel about that term? Because I fucking hate it. And I'll get into more of why.
I mean, I don't know. Maybe I lob a hot take right back where it's, I think, I don't know. So elevated horror is very much like you said. I wouldn't call The Exorcist, or generally people wouldn't call like The Exorcist elevated horror. Maybe it kind of is. It, or say Silence of the Lambs, whether you think it's a horror film or not, but still elevated.
The thriller.
Or Psycho, even, I don't know. Just stuff that just isn't like,
They'd be
schlock
classics,
or,
right?
yeah, but I say the elevated term, I think, really comes from its time. The coming out of the 2000s or the early 2000s or whatever, and then you get your It Follows, Hereditary, Babadooks, et cetera, that you, the ones that you think of, the Mount Rushmore of your elevated horrors, The Witch, et cetera, et cetera. Now, I think really they get an unfair shake, and I think people have turned on them a little bit,
Oh, for sure.
because they're called elevated just because they're good. And they were coming out of a time period where horror was just generally shitty.
Yeah.
Like when, dude, sorry, Rob Zombie fans, but
You're really shitting on them.
when you're coming out of the 2000s, when like the auteurs of horror were fucking Eli Roth and Rob Zombie, like, oh, and you just make something that's just thoughtful. Everyone's like, whoa, elevated. Like, whoa, Nelly, here we go.
Well,
And
and
that's my thing.
I think some of the things that I would consider elevated horror, and I'm not going to name any like specific movies. I'm going to name traits of movies that I would consider to be elevated. I think production value is important. I think a strong script is important, and I think good acting and casting is important. So like those things to me elevate a horror movie. Now, do I need all three of those things to enjoy a movie? Absolutely not.
No.
But I think that those things can impact a deeper understanding of a movie. Where I like disconnect a little bit is there was a moment where like if A24's name was on something, everybody was just fucking shouting from the rooftop that it was definitely going to be the next best movie. And that's kind of dropped off because they've put out some clunkers, and maybe not everyone would agree with me on that. But I really feel like one of my issues with the movies that do fit into this category of elevated horror is that you lose a specific type of element of fun. I'm not saying that they can't have fun in them because, when I saw that little girl's head fly off in Hereditary, I had a great time. And I was laughing. I don't know if that was the intention, but it's fun in its own way. But the other thing that's interesting to me is that I think a lot of people would consider The Conjuring a great movie, right?
But
Lots of
not
Conjuring,
elevated.
but not elevated. Why? So
Because it's,
what's the difference there?
well, I mean, and that's the thing. It's just like, it's, poorly written, not the best acted, has plot holes. And
Does it? I'm like, does it go deep enough to have plot holes?
elevated, I think, I don't know, it's hard because it's, does it have to have kind of like an indie kind of aesthetic?
A
No,
little
not
bit.
necessary.
I think a
Maybe.
little bit.
But I would still say, like we were talking before we hopped on here, like, do we count, say, Robert Eggers' like Nosferatu or the recent Del Toro Frankenstein? Is that elevated horror?
Yeah, I'd be really curious to hear what like any of you listening think about that because I wouldn't put those movies in that category. I'd put them in their own category.
I think that, yeah, the elevated horror is a really interesting and I think unfair tag for movies like that. And
Yeah.
then kind of just like how people would, like I was thinking like Halloween, when Halloween comes out and people, and then all the slashers afterwards kind of take, the maybe the schlockiest parts of it, and then it just becomes a clone of a clone of a clone of a clone, and then you end up with like really schlocky,
Yeah, you.
80s slashers.
Yeah.
And then what happens, I don't know. But I guess my example then is that now you've got movies where it's you can't have a horror script without the word trauma showing up. Even the last fucking like I Know What You Did Last Summer movie, which does get kind of incrementally better each time I watch it. So
Thank you.
I know.
That'll be our hot take. Maybe we'll save that
Yeah.
hot take for later.
But it's gotta be about like, trauma. It's at least to some degree, with it, or it's just so ham-fisted and unnecessary, and it's just lip service. So it
Yeah.
just like takes what people think, like, oh, this means people will take us seriously and think it's smart if we mention this
Yeah.
without doing the work, to get without earning it.
Exactly. So I think without like getting too into the weeds, when this term started to happen, like as somebody who loves what a lot of people consider bad movies or like B horror movies, I took great offense to it. And admittedly, it like Midsommar is a movie that I've turned around on a lot, like because and I'll go back to this hot take later, but I did not enjoy watching that movie the first like two times that I watched it. But I found myself keeping revisiting the movie because I was like, I want to see this again. I want to understand this a little bit better. And I've come to really, really love it, actually. But what I couldn't get past was the fucking trauma, the main character. I was so fixated. What is her name in the movie? Danny. I was so fixated on Danny and her trauma and her shitty attitude. And I know I get it. She lost her whole family. Yes, it's terrible. Okay.
In a pretty gruesome fucking
I
way, by
fuck
the way.
I get it. You all can listen to that episode if you want to hear me be a heartless bitch. But this character was so unbearable that I couldn't even see through the rest of the movie. And that's on me, everybody. That is on me. But it's something that really weighs down a movie for me. But now I watch that movie and I almost completely ignore Danny as a character and just enjoy the world and the characters around her and the things that are happening to her instead of trying to relate to her, because that's where I fucked up, is I wanted to like be in this character's shoes and I couldn't. So I think that is one of the consequences of focusing so heavily on trauma. And even another example I would use, and this is a movie that I haven't turned around on, is Talk to Me. People really love Talk to Me. I'm sure that like as soon as I said it, like maybe somebody got upset. I do not think that that is a good movie. I think that is an example of a copy of a copy of a copy of elevated horror. I think it's lazy. It doesn't make sense. Like the ending has no payoff. Like, and this is me really picking, maybe we'll talk about Talk to Me at some point, but so I won't, share too much. But that's an example of a movie that I feel like was on the tail end of these A24 films that, like, a lot of people liked it, but other people were kind of watching it like, wait, what? That's it. This is the movie we were all raving about. So that's my elevated horror take. To keep it light.
See, and I kind of like where things are starting to transition, where you
Me
have
too.
a movie like, say, I liked Long Legs better than you did, but it is a very serious situation, through almost the entirety of the movie. But then turns out, not to spoil anything, gets a little fun. And people seem to hate that though. They hate that it's like, oh my God, the whole thing got ruined at the end. And I'm like, what are you talking about? It got fun. Same with Weapons. It's this very serious situation, but like, no, this has a little more fun than you think it does. Especially when with that reveal of, the Gladys character. That's what I'd like to see more of.
Well, and I think that's where like it finally like broke, and there's like a compromise to like we can put depth and world building and character building into horror, still have the mystery of certain characters and the fear of those characters, but it doesn't have to be necessarily linked to something that is a metaphor for real life trauma or an actual example of real life trauma. I think that it's balancing out now again. So while the elevated horror doesn't feel relevant, like maybe doesn't feel like the most relevant hot take right now, I just need to double down on it because it was a very, just a very like relevant piece of like horror history, I think.
I just you honestly. I was ready just to like fucking put the armor on, get ready to, start fighting back. But you just completely disarmed me entirely when this is the first time I heard that you like Midsommar now. What? Oh my
Okay.
God. This is great news.
Do you want me to move into like my next hot take that's very much aligned? It might even be the same thing.
Sure.
Okay. Because it has to do with Danny and Midsommar quite a bit. So, one of the things that bothered me a lot about these movies, I don't need to connect to the protagonist. there's been a really long string of slashers that your final girl, your main character, can sometimes be the most boring or the most serious of your characters. Like your fun best friend is almost always going to get killed, right? So that doesn't bother me so much, but we've seen that you can do it well. We've seen Nancy Thompson. We've seen Sydney Prescott. We've seen Laurie Strode. Like, these are perfect examples of main characters, female especially, that are interesting and they're strong and they deal with the situation in a way that I'm like, yes, get it, girl. Like, that
Julie
feels.
James asks, how do I deal? The
Julie
rest are like, we
James.
know how to fucking do it.
Yeah. So
Oh, hey, love Julie James.
I think what's been exhausting for me is this sad, boring, you're starting with a damaged protagonist. Now, I say damaged because they're fictional characters. I would never say that about a real person. These are people who are fictional. They have
To
been
their face,
written
at least.
with trauma. Yeah, like they've been written with trauma. They start that way. So I'm meeting this character as this person. I would rather watch my protagonist become that person by the end of the movie or come out of it stronger. But when she starts that way, like Danny, we only see Danny for a short amount of time before this trauma happens to her. And not to mention, back to fucking Danny, she ain't shit before her trauma. She is awful. She lets that man step all over her, world's worst boyfriend.
Victim
So,
shaming, okay.
absolutely, 100%. She's so meek. Her friend is like trying to talk her up, and she's just like, I should really check on him. But that's neither here nor there. I like them to earn the trauma, like from beginning to end of the movie, instead of walking into these characters that are starting off. Even Hereditary is a great example. Toni Collette, amazing performance. No doubt about it. She's the fucking queen. But she's already starting off in this movie grieving the death of her mother, who she had a complicated relationship with. And then you layer on more trauma right at the beginning of that movie. And now you have a character that is painful to watch the whole movie. It's hard. And it makes me not want to rewatch them.
Soft disagree, only because both movies are about, like I think of Hereditary, right? Opens with the death of her mother and her complicated feelings about that. And I think the susceptibility that vulnerability can bring, from something like that happening. I think even more so with Midsommar, it's like, how can some meek ass average white girl fall into a crazy ass cult? And how do you put her in the mindset to crave connection so fucking much that this seems like a reasonable outlet, or this seems like a reasonable family to join. I'd say that, like, I think the having the traumatic thing happen early is almost necessary for both.
For both of those movies, yes, but I'm saying that's why they left a bad taste in my mouth when I originally had watched them. But also, here's another hot take. I think even if Danny didn't lose her parents and her sister tragically, that weak ass bitch would have been in that cult anyway. She would have been there anyway. It was destined. She, world's worst character.
You've never ignored a friend's good advice when it came to a romantic partner, really?
Never, never,
Are we both going to
never,
agree to that?
never in my life.
Okay. Me
And as
too.
my
Never in my life.
and as my best friend, I know you know that that is true.
Yep. So, I hear you. Let's
What's your
see.
next one?
I'm just gonna just shout out some rapid fire ones before I get to, I think, what could be my hottest take of the
I'm
evening.
so excited.
Bear with me, though, by the way. These are things that I probably have said randomly across other episodes, but I really do think it's a great place to have them all condensed right here.
Ooh, am I allowed to say if I agree or disagree, rapid fire?
Sure, if you'd like to.
Okay, great. Are you going to give me little to no explanation on these takes?
Don't think I need to.
Perfect.
So, let's bring back fucking kick-ass theme songs in horror movies. I don't
Yes.
even know if that's a hot take. I just
It's
put this
not.
l not even an exhaustive list. Ghostbusters, you got Deepest Bluest from Deep Blue Sea. You got Alice Cooper with Two, Prince of Darkness, and He's Back from Jason Lives. Killer Clowns from Outer Space. Fucking Who Made Who by AC/DC for Maximum Overdrive. Fuck yeah. You got Fright Night by the Jay Giles Band. Dream Warriors by Dokken, which is fucking awesome. Pet Sematary by the Ramones, also super fun. Probably one of the first ones.
Could be.
Oh no, well, that one, but actually my next one, Ben by Michael Jackson, who did for the movie Ben is the sequel to Willard, which I have not
Oh
seen, but
shit,
I know
I
the
haven't
song.
either. Yeah.
And then you've got unofficial ones like Nightmare on My Street, which
Ugh.
it's just a fucking bop. Like,
It's so fun.
I don't care. Like, oh, like I think would have made, given like Ready or Not, like a 5.5 boo score, the 6 boos even, is if you just had some kick ass bop that just explains the whole movie back to you. Oh my gosh. By some, washed up one hit wonder rapper, featuring some others. I don't know. Gosh, it'll be so much fun. Bring that back.
I absolutely 100% agree with that. We need more fun. Yeah.
I'm sure I've brought this up before, but we're from Southern California. We've been to Disneyland plenty. First of all, fuck y'all for getting rid of Tower of Terror at California
That's
Adventure.
fucked.
That's fucking fucked, dude. We're already over Guardians of the fucking Galaxy, dude. Who fucking
Like,
cares?
did they really think that was gonna like last the test of time more than the Tower of Terror?
Yeah. And you know what I want to see is that Steve Guttenberg, Kirsten Dunst Tower of Terror movie. It's not on Disney Plus, though. I checked.
Oh, I haven't watched it.
Yeah. And The Haunted Mansion, Natalie. Every fucking September through the end of the year, so literally a quarter of the fucking year, they take The Haunted Mansion and they do this during fucking Halloween, change it over to Nightmare Before
Assholes.
Christmas, which is a fucking Christmas movie. It is
It's a
not a
Christmas
Halloween movie.
movie.
Yes, thank you. You take the only haunted place in the park and you turn it into Nightmare Before Christmas. It is just, oh, it's awful.
It's honestly outrageous. I know it takes a long time and that, like, to set it up, and that's why they leave it for 3 months of the year. But I think one of our hot takes is that we're not big fans of The Nightmare Before Christmas.
Not really.
I don't think it's bad. I just think like people need to calm the fuck down. But also, I completely agree. The Haunted Mansion is the best fucking part of Disneyland, first of all.
Absolutely.
I don't think that's a hot take here in this realm, but it's absolutely ruining it. Like 100%. Anytime, if I think about going to Disneyland, I'm for sure planning around the Haunted Mansion being the Haunted Mansion. And also, they have to close it for so long to set up the Nightmare Before Christmas like
Yeah.
situation. So you're losing even more time from that. Yeah, I agree.
Oh, it makes me so upset.
It really does.
Yeah, thank you. A couple random off ones, like Silence of the Lambs, not a horror movie, but I think enough people talk about that.
It's a thriller.
Yeah. American Horror Story. I really think the only good season was the first one and maybe half of the third one. The rest of it, come on, get the fuck out of here.
I love the first season of American Horror Story. I didn't mind the second and third season because it was Asylum and then Coven.
Right.
I didn't mind those two seasons, but I think it's very overrated and also starts to become convoluted.
Yeah. So, just a few. I don't think that's too bad, right?
No, I don't think that's too bad.
No, I don't think so. But I will get into my last hot take, which might even be my hottest take. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Natalie, we love the Scream movies, right?
We do. You're walking on eggshells here.
I do have like a half mid warm take that would have been a hot take 20 years ago. That's half related that I'm going to bring up first before
20 years ago.
my
Okay.
main thesis is that boy, have I turned around on Randy. Randy sucks.
Yeah,
And
you really do hate Randy. Let's unpack that.
it is Randy. And I think another example, just because it was on TV the other day, is the character of Xander from Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Oh, very
These
different characters.
snappy, incel, creep, best friend, friend-zoned weirdos that are often the author insert. I know definitely for Xander, because Joss Whedon has said as
Yeah.
much. I'm like watching like just how much of a fucking creep Randy is, and this like entitlement almost to Sydney's attention. And then especially fucking, yeah, like watching Buffy the Vampire Slayer, just Jesus Christ, the shit that he says to her and the way that like he like just sexually like almost like just sexually abuses them. It's so gross, and I hate that trope in horror movies, and it sucks, and it makes me upset because I like look to those two characters as kind of like a dorky nerd where I was like, oh, but look, he's funny and the heroine likes him and like maybe he does have a chance, you know, and they're just misunderstood. And then God, the older I get, like I look at characters like that and I'm just like, oh Jesus Christ, I'm so fucking glad, you know, they didn't like Randy didn't end up with Sydney or something. That would have been fucking terrible.
All right. I got a lot of feelings on this.
I was worried because I was going to drag in a Buffy character into this as well.
Oh no, I think you're going to be surprised on this. So, obviously, I've just for the record, everyone, I've watched Buffy more times than anyone probably should. I absolutely love it. It's one of my favorite shows of all time. It was just the perfect timing for me, formative years watching Sarah Michelle Gellar just kick ass. Now, when I first watched Buffy, gosh, I was like 12. I still thought Xander was a dick. I was very confused as to why he was in a female space because he's around a lot of strong women and he is essentially the weakest one, not physically, because obviously Buffy is Buffy and has superpowers. You know, Willow ends up being a powerful witch. Cordelia just kicks ass and she's kind of a bully.
Yeah, she does.
But Xander had no business deserving to be around these women. And he
No.
does. He judges Buffy's relationship decisions as if he has ownership over her, whether that be as her friend or someone who's romantically interested in her. Xander is very problematic, and I think that Joss Whedon's insecurities and his own issues shine through that character. But I'm gonna push back on you with Randy. Okay, one more thing about Xander. The reason why I do forgive some of Xander's behavior, not forgive, but I forgive the writing on his behavior, is because I do believe that a teenage boy would act that way with women and with strong women and being intimidated by them.
But I think it's like, you know, art imitates life, imitates art. And I take, you know, like
Yes.
I feel guilty because of this, because I would base like how I would interact with women in my life based off some of those characters. And I'm just like, oh, it just makes me cringe so hard. And I think
Yeah.
that's why I have this extra emotion maybe towards it. I don't know.
Yeah. Now, the thing with Randy, again, Randy is a teenage boy. He's going to be stupid. He's going to have his things. I think the difference between Randy and Xander, Randy comes across as someone who is more delusional and like lovesick over Sydney than taking ownership over her, in my opinion. I know people all have like this like theory of they're like, oh my gosh, like Randy like followed her to the same college and everything. I'm like, in what world was Randy not going to want to go to a college that was like film and theater focused? And like, when did Sydney suddenly develop this sudden interest in acting? Like, you can't use that argument. I've seen that one a lot, and I don't think it's fair. I think Randy, while he's imperfect, he's not the best role model per se. I don't think you could compare him to Xander. But I have a soft spot for Randy. I was sad and like back in the day when he died in the second movie, but now like I'm okay with it. I think that was actually a really fun shock value and where else were we going to go? Because I wouldn't have wanted him to end up with Sydney either.
Yeah.
But a lot of people have like over the years liked Randy less. And I think in defense of Randy as a teenage boy in the 90s with just the world's biggest crush on this girl, like I just don't see a world where like you could write that character any other way that would be realistic at that time, if that makes sense. You know what I mean?
I
Not
hear you.
saying that you could forgive the behavior, but like the 90s was a rough time and people were just making excuses for young men and all men as they do now, but it was different the way that it was depicted on like popular television and what people would excuse.
Yeah, 2000 or 2000s were also a rough time, and arguably post-Trump when we think about well, we're not post, we're still in it, but when we think about, how men think it's okay to treat women, oof. So it's like that was a rough time, but we're also still kind of in a rough time again.
And Buffy's reactions to Xander also, I think, are very appropriate. Like she doesn't like brush things off. Like she very much is like she does like the how dare yous and like goes into like a big like let me fucking explain to you why you're wrong. So I do like that too.
So I derailed this a little bit
You did, but
because
that's okay. Yeah, that was a good one.
my big screen take is, I don't know if y'all have listened to our Scream franchise series
You
and
should.
heard our final rankings of Scream movies. We all know I don't like Scream 3, and
We
I
both
was
ranked it as the bottom.
is the bottom. It was wild seeing in some of the comments on our Scream ranking episodes that people would have three in such a high regard. Like, look,
Honestly, was shocked by some of those rankings.
yeah,
Yeah.
and that's some hot takes,
That's
but
some hot takes.
look, Parker Posey's great, 100%.
Love her.
Love her too. Not only the more I think about it, and this is one that I added. This was a late addition, like maybe an hour before we started. And just, I was thinking about this movie a lot. And I'm like, I don't care, and I don't get it when people try to defend it. Not only is it the worst Scream movie, I think that it's awful. I never find myself wanting to watch it ever. Maybe if it's on TV, but then also like I would still maybe change it. I don't
If it was on in a hotel room,
yeah, if there was some other horror movie on.
so you would check to see if something else was on, if it was there.
But then I was thinking about it, because I've been really really trigger happy with just deleting whole parts of franchises.
Yeah, you better calm down.
Yeah, I know. Not only do I not like Scream 3, you could just fucking delete that thing from the whole fucking series. And not only would it not fucking matter, because 99% of that movie does not fucking matter in the
No.
slightest, but the series would be better off for it. Like,
Wow.
think about this, Natalie. Just get Scream 3 out of your head. Get the, you know,
Oh,
get
the
the
25 years that it's been in my head. Sure. Let me just erase it real quick.
weak ass kills out of it. Get the convoluted brother plot out of it. Get
Oh,
the
yeah,
death
that's
fake
rough.
out plot out of it. Get the what was Maureen's other secret name, and whole thing is a film actress.
Shit, I don't even remember.
Yeah, who cares?
Rena Reynolds.
Rita Reynolds. Bad.
Rena.
Well, yeah, get rid of that whole fucking thing. Just if like as a trilogy, if it was just Scream, then Scream 2 a year later, and then fucking 15 years later, Scream 4. What a fucking tight fucking trilogy those movies would be. If that was it, like fuck. It would end so perfectly. And Scream 5 and Scream 6, like
They're their own thing.
they're their own thing, they're fun, and like literally the only references are, yeah, okay,
The first movie.
we get Heather Maserato, which is kind of fun, and then in Scream 6 they mention Roman Bridger once, and yeah, and then you have like the fax machine in the and some of the other things in that shrine in Scream 6, but
Easily removed if it didn't exist.
it does nothing to make me like any of these characters any better. It does nothing to give any additional depth to any of these characters that even is remembered. I mean, Jesus, like or I guess maybe in Scream 5, like Dewey asks, like, oh, how's Mark? But maybe it's some other fucking Mark, because in Scream 7, Joel
I think it
McHale is playing your
is.
husband, just
Yeah, I think it is a different mark.
who just happens to also be a police officer and also happens to be named Mark. You could just get rid of the whole fucking thing entirely. Get the fucking Randy videotape, that whole shit, get out of it. The Jay and Silent Bob cameo, like, there is nothing redeeming about that movie except for this brief part where you get Parker Posey and Courteney Cox working together.
It's so good.
And maybe this is a hot take, but yeah, Parker Posey's so good in that movie. I feel like it just fucking wastes her. God, imagine her in one of the better Scream movies.
Well, also, I think Parker Posey being in that movie also makes people remember it fondly because her character is so fun and strong. And even like you said, the back and forth between her and Courteney Cox is so good that I think those pieces of the movie make you remember it fondly, and then they go and like kill that character. Like, what were we thinking? But it, just for reference, everyone, Kyle gave Scream 3 two boos, which is his lowest scored Scream movie.
Very generous. I think if I could go back and change that to a one or one and a half, I probably
Wow,
would.
so you were riding on nostalgia there.
I think so. Because I think even I was fooled, because people say, like, no, come on. It's sure it's a little silly, but it's just so convoluted and dumb. And yeah, okay, I like Patrick Warburton too, but like it's such between him and Parker Posey, like the movie is such a cartoon.
It is.
It's just not fun. And I think going directly from Scream 2 to Scream 4 is a much cooler watch. Because Scream 4 kicks ass.
So I'll say this, that's definitely your hottest take. Very, very hot take. Now, for reference, I gave Scream 3 a generous three boos. Now,
Too much.
I don't remember if I said this in our episode, but I'll explain that three boos right now, and then I'll give you my opinion of what you just shared. I gave that movie three boos, one for nostalgia, two for Parker Posey, and three for the fact that I love the characters of Sydney, Gale, and Dewey so much that I just always want to see more of them. So, like, less time with them, even though Sydney's like in half of that movie, less time with them feels like I'm being like robbed. So the more I can see those characters, the happier I am. So that's the reasoning behind that score. Now, I probably would lower it to a 2.5 looking back, and it is my lowest ranked Scream movie, and it always will be. It does have weak kills. You get a lot less blood. It felt very forced. Like, with all of that going on, I probably would have said, you know what? Fuck y'all. If you're not gonna let me have blood in this movie, we're not making the movie. Like, what's the point? It's a slasher. We wanna see blood. And the timing was unfortunate. So I think it's wild to delete the movie completely. But as I'm working through it in my head, I really fucking hate Roman Bridger as the killer and being Sydney's secret brother and the dramatic like hand holding. And all, like, imagine, like, let's paint a picture here. Imagine you had a brother that you didn't know existed, and you find out that this is your brother after finding out that he killed a bunch of people, whether you knew them or not. Would you like tragically like hold that brother's hand while they're dying on the floor after they tried to brutally murder you?
I'd be like, I need a DNA test first. Like before you could
Fuck
just,
no.
any crazy asshole could just say like, oh, I'm your brother, Sid, your secret, whatever,
Yeah.
whatever. The
Like
fuck out of here.
that just doesn't, it just doesn't sit right with me. And then rewriting history like Scream 3 does, it rewrites history from the first film, which is even more frustrating because I love what Billy and Stu share about their plan and their motive is perfect for me. That's a perfect movie. It's a perfect motive. We don't need to know anymore. It's good. It's
Like,
great.
how dare a movie so fucking bad and neutered
Yes.
also completely change arguably the best movie in the franchise in the original? Like,
Yeah.
you haven't fucking earned that shit. Get the fuck out of here with
Yeah.
that. I don't need
Like,
some PG-13 light fucking Scream movie. Like, it's so bad.
yeah.
And that's the more I think about it, I'm like, okay, Parker Posey, what else is redeeming about this? Because, yeah, okay, sure. Courtney Cox is in it. David Arquette's in it. Neve
It is
Campbell's
Gail's
in it.
worst haircut, though.
But, like, would you, when you watch those movies, like, are you just like, oh man, that's a standout, fun depiction of each of those characters in Scream 3? No, the best
No.
versions of them are in other movies. So I just don't get people that defend that movie. And I want to go an extra step and say, not only is that movie just straight trash, but fuck, like, just delete it. Just delete it. Just watch 1, 2, 4, 5, and 6, and
I
you'd be for the better. Like, I think if I wanted to show someone the Scream franchise, I think I'd skip it. I'd say, well, just skip it. It's not worth it. And once we watch all of them, if you want to see or circle back and watch this story that adds really nothing,
It
that,
ruins prior story.
yeah, it adds nothing. It just ruins the good stories. So I don't.
I know we have a regular listener who is going to strongly disagree with you on this. So we'll see how that goes if I end up getting any text messages regarding that opinion. I think that's a very hot take. Now, where I don't agree with you is I would not ever touch the Scream franchise. I won't touch it. But where I agree with you, it is the worst Scream movie. It absolutely doesn't hit the same way the others do. And I actually do like your call out of like Scream 1, Scream 2, and then Scream 4 being like a really fun trilogy. Especially because I know a lot of people hate this about Scream 4, but I love that we introduce all these new characters and then just fucking kill all of them.
Love
It's
it.
great. So that's a really, really hot take. I'm curious to hear what everybody thinks of that one. Please don't stop listening to our podcast because of Kyle. Okay, I have one final one that's quick and we don't have to go into it too much because I know we're running a bit long. I just thought of this as we were talking through things, but I think one of my biggest horror hot takes, and this is movie specific, is I do not think that Jaws is the best shark movie.
What, Deep Blue Sea or something, or what?
It's Deep Blue Sea. Deep Blue Sea is the best shark movie.
Because there's three sharks and they're super smart. Obviously.
Those both of those things are true, but also it has the most shark action in it than any other shark movie. And while you get heavy CGI, you also get practical effects, and it holds up. All the effects hold up pretty fucking good. Like, I've watched it recently. I watch it very often, actually. And I just think it's the best shark movie. Now, I'm not gonna say, I don't think that Jaws is a bad movie. I think Jaws is an amazing movie. I really love it. I watch it every, like, probably like every 5 years. But I think you can give Jaws its accolades and say that it laid the groundwork for horror in a new and different way and is scary and effective and, you know, did camera angles that we had never seen before. It made the water scary in a way that we had never seen before, but it also is from the 70s, and I want to see sharks munch up people, and Deep Blue Sea delivers. It's got a, and it's got what Kyle was asking for. It's got an original song written for a film.
Yeah, it's a shame that I don't know how old LL Cool J was when Jaws came out, but yeah, he wasn't on deck to write a song.
No, I don't think he was rapping at that time.
Right.
No.
I'm not gonna push back on that. I mean,
I know you love Deep Blue Sea, but
I love Deep Blue Sea. I mean, Jaws is very perfect in
oh,
so many
absolutely.
respects. So I'm not gonna like say, yeah, absolutely.
Again, no shade to Jaws. I love Jaws.
Yeah, but Jaws times three, super smart. And you start deeper in the water, you know, when you're making your way up. So
And bluer.
it's deep. It's yeah, deepest, bluest. Yes, that's
Yeah.
true. Yeah, okay, sure. I like it.
I had to throw that one in there. Again, love Jaws. Love it. Would recommend to anyone to watch it. But if you were like, hey, Natalie, I'll see you're watching a shark movie tonight. Should I watch the 1970s classic Jaws? Or should I watch Deep Blue Sea starring LL Cool J and Thomas Jane? I'm gonna say Deep Blue Sea.
Both movies end in the aftermath of a dead shark and pieces everywhere, and two dudes just being like, wow, look at us. Wow.
We fucking did
We did it.
it.
I'm glad the shark ate that fucking woman, to be honest. So,
Spoilers.
spoilers.
Anything else that you feel like the people need to know?
Gosh, I don't think so. Yeah, no, I'm good.
Okay. Yeah, same.
I feel like we dropped a lot here.
Yeah, definitely. That I think we needed a free discussion of things because you know we've covered a lot of movies. We've been through quite a few. I would love to do more bonus episodes. So if there's anything that you all want to hear us talk about, we would love to know what those things are. Any topics, any if you want to hear rankings, I'd be happy to rank things. You know, what do you want to hear? And do you agree or disagree with our hot takes? Do you have any hot takes yourself that you want to share? Has Kyle enraged you by saying that we should delete Scream 3?
In like
Let us
nine
know.
Halloween movies.
And
Yeah.
like the whole Halloween franchise. We there people fucking love that franchise.
That's wild. I mean, I think like we, obviously I said nice things about H2O when we covered it, and I like the first one. And
I like the idea of Michael Myers and the character of Michael Myers more than I like most of those movies.
or it's like I like the idea of the shape more than
Yes.
the movies and where it goes. I don't know.
I agree.
Yeah, so hell yeah.
That's great.
Silent Hill 2 is better than any of the Resident Evils. Is that a hot take?
Whoa, that's a real fucking hot take. I can't believe you would just throw that out there at the end of this episode. What the
Yeah.
fuck?
Because I was thinking about Resident Evil and I was like, oh, I hate playing as like a fucking cop
Well, I mean,
or
you
a
have to put that
military
aside.
person, you
Okay.
know?
I haven't played Silent Hill 2 for a really long time. You've been making me want to replay it
Wait,
for
that
a couple,
remake.
yeah, for a couple reasons, because there's a remake and it's been a long time, and I do love Silent Hill 2, but also I want to replay it because eventually I am going to want to talk about the Silent Hill movie. We're going to get there. But
Oh yeah.
I have to disagree with that. I love Resident Evil 2. I love Resident Evil 4. I think those are perfect games. Cop or not.
I still like Silent Hill too. Just the vibe's better.
It's scary.
Yeah.
It's scary. Don't play that game in the dark.
Oh yeah, 100%.
Well, I mean, you'll be able to see the screen better if you play it in the dark, but I get too scared to play it in the dark.
Yeah.
God, hot take.
Just one spicy little meatball to throw at the end there.
That's fucked up. Don't like it. All right. Well, again, share any hot takes that y'all have. Thanks for listening, and we'll do more bonus episodes. We'll give Kyle some more breaks from hosting. Sounds
Love
good?
that. Yeah, love it. Thank you.
Right, everybody. 3, 2, 1, ghost. Thanks for listening to our Horror Hot Takes episode. If you enjoyed this episode, subscribe to our podcast and leave us a killer review on whichever platform you choose to listen. You can find us on Instagram at 321GhostPod and give us a follow. We would love to hear your hot takes. Follow us on Letterboxd at 321GhostPod to see our boo scores on all of the movies we've covered so far. Next week, we've got a listener request with John Waters, Serial Mom. Thanks again for listening. And remember, we respect your opinions, but you might be wrong. 3, 2, 1, ghost.